Jacob Wetherling was born on February 17th of 1978 in St. Joseph, Minnesota. His parents, Patty and Jerry, also had three other children. Trevor Wetherling, 10 years old, Amy Wetherling, the oldest, and Cameron Wetherling, 8. St. Joseph was a tiny town, and everyone who lived there knew each other, so it was considered a relatively safe town, so kids would always ride their bikes around like nothing. The Wetherlings lived on the outskirts of this small town. Growing up, Jacob was the sweetest little boy. He was 11 years old in the 6th grade and loved playing football and hockey.
Today, October 12th, I'm 5 feet tall. My whole name is Jacob Irvin Wetherling. My favorite food is steak. My favorite color is blue. My best friend is Aaron Larson.
The day of was Sunday, October 22nd of 1989. It was considered a busy day. They woke up in the morning and Jacob and his father went fishing, which Jacob loved to do. They came home in time to watch the Vikings versus Detroit Lions football match, and after they went indoor ice skating. That night, Patty and Jerry had a dinner thing with their friends, which was about 25 minutes away from their house. So they left that night around 5:30. They weren't planning on staying long, therefore they left the three younger children home alone along with Jacob's best friend Aaron, who was 11 years old as well at the time. The boys decided that they wanted to rent a movie, and there was a local Tom Thumbs not too far away from the house. It was like a 15-minute bike ride. Trevor called their parents to ask to go, and Patty said no, but their father Jerry said yeah, they could go as long as they brought a flashlight with them. They left their 8-year-old sister with the neighbor. Jacob got a flashlight and headed out. It was about 45 minutes after getting off the phone with Trevor, the Wetherlings received a phone call from their neighbor, Marlon, saying that they needed to get home immediately because Jacob was gone and someone had taken them. The neighbor then called the police and was trying to explain what happened, but obviously he wasn't there, so he put Trevor on the phone who explained everything.
Yes, this is Merlin Sturzak calling from Amistad, Alden Township. I am right now next door to my neighbor, the Jerry Wetherling family. Some of their boys went down to Tom's to pick up a movie, and on their way back, someone stopped them, and we believe that they have one of the boys because one of the boys did not come back with them.
Were they put up their vehicle?
Just a second, I'll ask for it. Was there a vehicle there, or was he walking?
Yeah.
They didn't see a vehicle. This person appeared on the road when they were bicycling back home.
Okay, what was Jacob last seen wearing?
He was wearing a red hockey jacket that had police department on it.
Trevor, you're talking to the sheriff's office, okay? I want you to give me anything you can recall about this male party that approached you guys, okay?
According to Jacob and Aaron, when returning back, there was this long gravel driveway where they were stopped by a man wearing all black with a black mask who was walking towards them. He told them, "I have a gun," and to put their bikes into the ditch and then to get into the ditch themselves lying face down. At first, the boys thought that they were getting punked by some older kids, but then the man asked Trevor how old he was. Trevor replied, telling him he was 10 years old, and then the man told Trevor to get up and run away into the bushes and to not look back or he will get shot. The man then asked Jacob and Aaron to stand up. He asked Aaron how old he was. Aaron said he was 11, and then he asked Jacob how old he was while he was, like, groping and fondling Jacob. Jacob said he was 11, and he told Aaron the same thing as Trevor, to run away or to get shot. When Aaron caught up with Trevor, they looked back, but Jacob wasn't there, and the man was gone. This was about 9:20 p.m., which is the last time Jacob was ever seen alive.
Initially, when we were going down to Tom Thumb, there's a little field to the left-hand side of the road. I remember hearing a little rustle, you know, it's kind of tall grass, and a kind of a shiver went through me, and I didn't know if it was, you know, just the wind or an animal, but just something didn't feel right inside of me. I mean, it was so dark out that you couldn't see anything, and I just remember the first thing I saw was kind of the flash of the gun. I mean, it was like a silver kind of flash. There's a little, I don't know, it's a little, but a farmhouse to the left of us, and so they had their driveway. So I kind of came out of that driveway there, and the guy just saying, stop, I have a gun. And I think my initial reaction was, I figured it was just some high school kid or something, just kind of pulling a joke on us. And he told us he had a gun, you know, and we had to turn off our flashlights. And after that, it was just kind of, you know, he had all black on. So, I mean, it was just the silhouette, you know, probably sending chills down my spine to hear his voice again. We got told to basically lay down in the ditch with our faces down. And he asked Trevor to look at him and tell him how old he was. Same with me, and then same with Jacob. And then, you know, he told Trevor to run as fast as he could in the woods or else he would shoot. And then Trevor was gone maybe, I mean, it wasn't that long, you know, 10 seconds maybe, until, you know, he basically did the same thing with me and told me to run. You know, obviously Jacob was still there. I ran as fast as I could to catch up with Trevor. And then, you know, we went maybe 100 yards and he looked back, you know, and there's nobody there at that point. I mean, I remember sitting in their house that night in their living room. They have a big picture window and you could see everybody pull up, and, you know, all through the whole night, I just remember thinking, you know, sooner or later he's going to come up and he's going to get out of the car and this will all be over.
When the officers first arrived at the Wetterlings' house, they questioned Trevor and Aaron, but the officers did not believe that they were telling the truth. They thought Aaron and Trevor were playing with the gun, accidentally shot Jacob, and that they were trying to cover it up. It wasn't until 10:45 p.m. when they started their search, which was a massive search. They had firefighters, volunteers, law enforcement, and they even had helicopters looking for Jacob. But the only thing found was footprints and tire tracks at the long gravel driveway where Jacob was abducted. Weirdly, the officers did not question any of the neighbors or police that lived by the long gravel driveway. This case turned massive. They had so many leads, many people from St. Joseph's wanted to help out. And there were hundreds of officers working this case. The Wetterlings did interviews almost every single day in order to get more leads and to keep Jacob's name out there, and it worked. By 2016, they had about 70,000 leads, and police were following every single one. But they didn't have any suspects or persons of interest, so it was basically a dead end. In 2010, a blogger named Joy Backer was fascinated by this case and ended up contacting the Wetterlings and kind of started putting together her own investigation to what she thought happened that day. Joy Backer discovered that five boys all went missing in the same area Jacob went missing between the summer of 1986 and the spring of 1987. Gerald Sherrold was a kid that got abducted 9 months before Jacob did, down the road from the Wetterlings' house. A man approached Jacob in a vehicle, asking for direction. This is when the driver jumped out of the car, grabbed him by the shoulders, put him inside the car, and said he has a gun and wasn't afraid to use it. Gerald was driven 5 miles away from that location and sexually assaulted by this man. But he was let go, as long as he ran away and never looked back. And that was almost exactly what this man told Trevor and Aaron. Also, the way Trevor and Aaron described this man is extremely similar to how Jared describes the man who abducted him. The man was average height and weight and had a low-key, raspy voice. Sadly, the years went by and Jacob was still not found.
On October 28th of 2015, which marks 26 years after the abduction of Jacob, a man named Danny Herenrich was named a person of interest in the case. Back in December of 1989, the year that Jacob was taken, Danny was actually questioned by the FBI. There wasn't enough evidence linking Jacob to Danny, so he was let go. But Danny's DNA was actually connected to the abduction of Jared through DNA evidence of Jared's sweatshirt, whose story was extremely similar to Jacob's. Unfortunately, by the time that they matched Danny's DNA to Jared's sweatshirt, the statute of limitations had expired and they were not allowed to arrest him. But it was a good enough reason to search his house. When searching his house, they found child pornography, so he was immediately arrested. Danny decided to cooperate with the authorities, and on September 1st of 2016, Danny showed the FBI where he buried Jacob Wedling exactly 27 years earlier.
After nearly three decades of secrets, all was revealed in just a few minutes in the federal courthouse. After he signed a plea deal, Danny Heinrich would explain what happened the night of October 22nd.
And now to a chilling confession in a Minnesota courtroom to a murder mystery that has haunted that state for nearly three decades. A man finally admitting to the 1989 abduction, assault, and killing of an 11-year-old boy.
Last week, authorities unearthed Jacob Wetterling's remains, ending a mystery that has long haunted the state. The gunman confessed he drove Wetterling from St. Joseph to Painesville. He molested the boy and murdered him.
According to reporters in court, Heinrich told the judge, "I was driving on a dead-end road. I noticed three children on their bicycles with a flashlight." At the time, Jacob's brother described how the two of them and a friend were held at gunpoint.
"He told us to put our bikes in the ditch and lay down."
Heinrich says he drove away with Jacob, handcuffing him. The boy asked, "What did I do wrong?"
After almost 27 years, Danny Heinrich was willing to talk, and we had to grab the moment.
The 53-year-old told police where he buried Jacob's body in exchange for not being charged with the murder. Heinrich still faces 20 years in prison after pleading guilty on the pornography charges. The Wetterlings agreed to the deal to bring an end to their tireless search.
It was 30 miles from the Wetterling's house, and law enforcement was able to confirm that it was him through dental records. Sadly, because Danny agreed to a plea deal and showed them where Jacob's body was, and essentially allowing them to solve the Wetterling's case, he was not charged with Jacob's murder. He was only sentenced for one count of child pornography. His charge does carry a maximum of prison sentence for 20 years. Only 20 years, even after sexually assaulting at least two kids, killing one of them. But the worst part is that he could get out in 17 years if he has good behavior. However, this plea does not let authorities seek silver commitment as a sexual predator. Therefore, there is a good chance that he will never actually be free. The bizarre guy did not plan to do this at all. He just saw three random boys riding their bike and waiting for them to get closer.
Abducting Jacob at gunpoint, handcuffing him, and sitting him in the front passenger seat of his car. Jacob crying, saying, "What did I do wrong?" How he took Jacob back to Painesville, 30 miles away, Heinrich took him to a gravel pit outside of town, removed Jacob from the car, removed his clothes, and took him to a grove of trees where he molested him.
He said that he was able to avoid the police by listening to a police scanner. He started to hear police sirens, which had nothing to do with him, but he assumed that they were possibly coming for him, and he panicked, so he randomly decided to shoot Jacob in the head.
Jacob eventually said, "I'm cold, take me home," and started to cry. Heinrich choked up as he described how he saw a patrol car come down the highway. Heinrich told Jacob to turn around, raised a revolver to Jacob's head, but the gun jammed. Jacob was still standing. Heinrich said he pulled the trigger a second time, and Jacob fell to the ground. Heinrich walked back to his home, the Plaza Hotel in Painesville, returning a couple of hours later to bury Jacob in a shallow grave. Returning 1 year later, discovering the remains were partially uncovered, he could even see Jacob's jacket. He moved the bones and clothes to a farm across the highway, where he dug a trench 2 feet deep. And that's where Jacob remained for nearly 27 years.
In 1994, the Jacob Wetterling Act was passed. This was the first law to institute a state sex offender register. And after Jacob's abduction, Patty and Jerry formed the Jacob Wetterling Foundation. This is an advocacy group for children's safety. And in 2018, the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center. and the foundation is dedicated to spreading awareness and education on sexual predators, how it happens, who takes them, and what we can do to prevent it.